Welcome to Focus on the Upstate, a program dedicated to informing you about organizations that serve our community and how you can get involved with them. Here's your host, Chris Evans.
Good morning and welcome to Focus on the Upstate, a pre-recorded production of Entercom Communications. My name is Chris Evans, and this is episode 17 now of the COVID Chronicles. Joining me again, you know what, Dr. Sicosio, I've lost count. It's Dr. Saria Sicosio, Ambulatory Chief Medical Officer for Prisma Health. Good morning, doctor.
Hi, good morning. It's great to join you again, Chris.
Well, it's great to have you again. I've lost count of how many times you've been on. By this point, you are my most frequent guest on this show the 5 years that I've been doing it, which is, I should get you a trophy or something.
Well, I have enjoyed the time on this show. Thank you for connecting me to our listeners.
Well, thanks very much. And I was out for a couple of weeks, and we'll get to why exactly that was in a little bit. But I wanted to catch up with you because a lot has changed since the last time you and I talked. I think it's been about 3 weeks now since the last time we talked. And we were talking before the show about this. I was pulling numbers for the pandemic now in both nationally and in the state of South Carolina. We are approaching 4 million cases. 3.71 is the number that I got today in the United States. Deaths over 141,000. And we've conducted 45, almost 46 million tests, which I think was part of that testing initiative that we've gone under the past, I don't know, month and a half or so. What do you see from your perspective as a doctor who's kind of dealing with this pandemic every day? What's our progress?
So, Chris, those are indeed incredible numbers. It's really tough to wrap your mind around what does that mean when you have so many zeros added to COVID-19. It can be somewhat irrelative. So let's put some relativity to the conversation.
Okay.
I'll share with you where we are in the upstate and what we've experienced in our health system. Back in May, when we thought we were at our peak of cases and we were on top of this and we were testing, but testing supplies were severely limited, we may have seen our hospitalizations with maybe 30 patients or so in the hospital. And now what we're seeing, fast forward to July, and we have over 170 people in the hospital in the upstate suffering with COVID-19. This is very serious. So also fast forward with the number of tests that we have tested over 500,000 people in South Carolina now. But let's also share that now there are over 67,000 plus cases of COVID-19 in South Carolina. Based on what I read this morning in the New York Times, South Carolina is now rated third in the entire country for the number of COVID cases per capita. This is a very big issue for South Carolina. And for Greenville County, we're ranked number two in the state for number of cases. However, we have the greatest number of deaths in Greenville County for South Carolina. So that gives some perspective and brings it home to us in the upstate and what that means for us and our people, our family, our friends, and our community.
Yeah, just this week, I believe the number crossed the four-digit mark. We now have over 1,000 deaths in the state of South Carolina. The deaths was another thing that I wanted to ask about because we had another news story, and I know we talked about this before, and I've heard stories like this kind of along and along, not regularly, but frequently enough that it seems out of place, that DHEC has gotten a submission from area hospitals that's just sort of this glut, or I believe the word that you used at one point was bolus of reporting that hadn't been reported previously. It hadn't been reported in a timely fashion. And so we've got this sort of spike in the number of deaths that may be a little bit misleading. It's not that that many people just died today, for example, or this week, for example. It's that these deaths have kind of built up over time and were just reported all at once in one fell swoop to the department that's actually keeping track of all of this.
Yes, that's an accurate synopsis of what we're experiencing right now. And what I will say in support of DHEC is they are doing their best to verify and validate that they are true deaths due to COVID-19, true number of cases. So that's another reason why sometimes we see, as you've repeated me, the bolus or that large number increase in any given day. And we see it fluctuate relatively throughout the week, and that's because testing sites are open on certain days and the amount of time it takes to process those tests and then submit those results back to DHEC.
Well, and that's one of the things that occurred to me in regard to this, is that if this glut of new reported cases has made the recent number of deaths seem artificially high, the time period when they should have been reported might be artificially low as well. And it seems like this curve may be flatter than it looks.
Well, let's unpack that a little bit. And yes, that is true to a certain extent that there may be several days delay, but it's not as if it is weeks and months delayed that those deaths are confirmed.
Okay.
So what we are seeing in our community is an increase in hospitalizations and an increase in deaths. So that's something we're seeing, we're experiencing, and I'm sure that our listeners are seeing and experiencing the same. As that rate grows, you're more likely to know someone, perhaps at work or part of your family or even in your neighborhood, that is now infected, or the hospitalizations or the deaths that are occurring. So while, yes, there may be an injection or a report out of several cases at once, it's not as if they're catching up from months behind. It may be days behind.
Okay. Well, and the other question that occurred to me is, speaking of weeks and months, is that we've talked before about the sort of discrepancy in the duration of the disease. People who have mild or moderate symptoms seem to get over their symptoms and get back to a healthy state more quickly than people who have severe infections and need to be hospitalized. And eventually the people who die from those have lasted kind of the longest. And that seemed sort of counterintuitive to me, or that it seems like if you were frail and susceptible enough to get major complications from this coronavirus, that it would kill you quickly rather than slowly. But that doesn't seem to be the case. And so I wonder if some of these deaths are indeed people who have been sick for weeks.
Well, that is true. We do see a mix of all those experiences. What I'm personally seeing in our own community is when people have mild symptoms, those can last up to 2 weeks. And mild may be severe fatigue, where you just can't get out of bed or you can't go back to work, and perhaps a loss of sense of smell or taste. And those symptoms can linger for days. But you're absolutely right. We're seeing with our patients who die from COVID-19, they struggle and they fight to survive for weeks. And so it just depends on the individual cases that we're seeing. And of course, it continues to change and we learn more as the data comes in. But I doubt that this increase in deaths is due to COVID cases in May.
Well,
so
fair
if
enough.
You follow me, it's still relatively temporal or timely of where we are as of July 17th.
Fair enough. And I suppose that speaks as a credit to the doctors that are treating these people, that the sickest cases are lasting so long. You guys are doing your best to keep these people alive long enough to get over the disease. And for some people, that doesn't happen. But I interpret that as a success as far as the treatment is concerned, even if the end result is the patient dying.
Yes, certainly. In fact, we have fewer patients ventilated today on COVID-19 than we had early on. And it's because we've learned so much from this disease and how we manage it. We're no longer giving individuals chloroquine. We do have remdesivir, which is another antiviral medication that's being used and followed and managed and allocated at the state level at this time. We're also doing something called plasmapheresis. So
yes.
Plasmapheresis.
I am familiar with this, but I want you to talk about it because I am a donor and my blood type is AB negative, and that's all they want from me is platelets. I am apparently the universal platelet donor, and so I go through this on a regular basis.
Yeah, excellent. And that plasma is so critical right now. So if I could put a plea out there to our listeners, if you have been COVID-19 positive, if you know someone who's been COVID-19 positive, please, please, please consider a donation of your blood, of your plasma, because what we have found is that plasmapheresis, or donation of your plasma to another person suffering with COVID-19, we're seeing an improvement in the symptoms, and in many cases, a shortening of that hospital stay. So it's important to get that message out there widely. And some may be afraid, Chris. Some may feel, oh my goodness, I can't give blood because I've had COVID-19. And in this case, it's exactly opposite. We want your blood
right.
because you've had COVID-19. And then others, I think, may be fearful that as they have recovered from COVID-19, that they need every blood cell, every plasma dose, everything to improve. But you do have the capacity to donate blood, to donate plasma, and still be well and move in the right direction and help save lives.
You know, one of the things we should talk about is kind of how real this has gotten. You mentioned earlier that more and more people either know somebody or know somebody who knows somebody that's had this now. And as we see these numbers climbing up, it seems kind of like the, you know, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. You know, you're going to know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who had it. Well, it's going to step back closer to you the more people that there are that have it. Just a couple of weeks ago, I didn't know anybody who had had it. Now, not only do I know people who have had it, I've had it myself. I was diagnosed COVID-19 positive, so I have a new perspective on this, and it really was quite the experience.
And I'm so glad you're back to the radio, Chris, for those reasons, and have been one of those mild cases.
Yes, thank you very much. And it was a mild case. In fact, I didn't even have symptoms until after I got tested. I was tested kind of precautionarily because I had come into contact with other people. And I still, to this day, I don't know where I got it. I have some suspicions, but I can't pinpoint it. It's fascinating the way this contact tracing works, because you would expect, or at least I think I would expect, people to be able to pinpoint the exact date and time and location that they contracted this virus, but that hasn't been the case for me. I still don't know where I got it from.
Well, and at this time, you've had so many exposures to so many people, it is difficult to pinpoint. And that is the challenge that we're in right now, is that COVID-19 is so prevalent in our communities. It's not just one person that's putting you at risk. It's several people in our communities, and that we put people at risk because we don't know until we've got it.
Well, and I know we've talked about this before, the amount of time that you spend asymptomatic before you show any symptoms at all. In fact, I was concerned that I wasn't going to show any symptoms at all and that my test was going to come back positive. And I was thinking, how do I go back to work if I don't have any symptoms? Because they're waiting for the symptoms to end. You know, they're waiting for the symptoms to stop before I can go back to work, because that's when they know you're not really contagious anymore. How do I know I don't have any symptoms anymore if I didn't have any to begin with?
Yes, and I think that's the challenge that we've seen early on, and the challenge with contact tracing and testing people who are not symptomatic. That is the challenge, because then what do you do with that result? And that's been the challenge we've seen with employers across the upstate. And initially we saw it in phase one, if you will, when businesses were reopening and they were getting people back to work and wanted to offer that reassurance to their patrons that it was a clean place, it was a safe place. Well, the challenge is, if you're asymptomatic and you have a positive test, what's really tough to tell is, are you still really infectious and did you have this quite some time ago? Now, we also know that if you're asymptomatic, you can pass it on. So that's also a challenge dealing with this particular pandemic. But where we're trying to focus our energy and encouraging patients to get tested are those who are symptomatic, those with high risk exposure. So if you've been in an enclosed space for several hours with someone without masks on, then you probably need to get tested if an individual who you've been exposed to is positive. So those are the cases we're trying to wade through at this time. Now, it's also challenging considering the number of people who want tests. And it's inhibiting our ability to get to those patients who really need testing. Again, those who are symptomatic, those who've had high-risk exposure, and there's different nuances. So I encourage people to do the virtual visit to find out if they really need it. That's on the PrismaHealth.org/coronavirus website. You can get a virtual visit for COVID-19 for free. If you have a primary care provider, they can also order this test. Any provider, a physician, a nurse practitioner, a physician's assistant can place this order as well. And we'd love to see you in our drive-through testing sites, and we want to make sure that we can get to you soon. I do realize those lines are climbing, and for one, it's because the number of people who are positive and the worried well that are also concerned who are trying to line up at the same time.
Well, and speaking of that, I actually went through this process. First of all, I can tell you the symptom checker on prismahealth.org/coronavirus is really nifty. It's more than just like a little box, you know, like checking off little boxes of which things. It's this sort of conversation with this AI that you have, and it walks you through this whole process. I hit kind of a snag because that was the first thing I did when I was told that I needed to get tested because I had had because I had come into close contact with somebody who had tested positive. I went through there, and one of the questions that it asks you is, do you have any of these symptoms? And I didn't have any of those symptoms. And then it said, well, you don't need a test. and I was like, well, okay, but I think I do because I've come into contact with somebody, and I know there's a period of asymptomaticity that occurs at the beginning of the infection. So I wound up talking to a nurse practitioner at Prisma, and she authorized a test. I did go through the drive-through at the downtown Greenville Memorial location. You guys have converted an entire parking garage into a testing facility. It's actually really impressive. The line was long for me. I got a tip from one of my colleagues who also got tested because of the same sort of thing. He had come into contact with somebody. He tested negative, and he said that he went to the Lawrence Hospital because he lives closer to that area, and there were two cars in front of him and no cars behind him. So maybe that's a tip for some of the listeners. If you don't mind a trip to Lawrence or you're in that area, consider going there because otherwise you could be waiting a little while.
Yes, that's right. And that's an excellent reminder for me to share with our listeners today, Chris, that because of the demand and the rate of COVID-19 in our communities, we have opened up additional testing sites. So yes, Lawrence is open. Our Memorial Hospital testing site still continues to run, but we also added Greer Memorial, and as of this week, Baptist Easley and Oconee Memorial is also doing testing. So we're trying to be as accessible as possible, and as we've discussed in the past, we continue to have our community testing sites that pop up across the upstate because we want to make sure everyone has access to care and access to COVID-19 testing. And you made me think of one other suggestion we can give to our community listeners today.
Please.
And that is, so when do I get tested? I've had an exposure. What does that mean? Well, here's what we know about COVID-19. If you are asymptomatic, because if you're symptomatic, you get tested immediately.
Right.
Please get tested immediately, even if it's a mild symptom. You may think it's allergies. You may think it's your asthma acting up. Please go get tested immediately. If you're asymptomatic, however, and you are notified that you've been exposed to someone, make sure that it's at least 5 to 7 days before you're tested. This is because if you get tested the day after you have an exposure to someone you know, there's a very good chance that that test will remain negative unless you picked it up somewhere else. Same with day two, same with day three. And it's not until you get to that day 5 to day 7 mark where if you have been exposed and you become positive and you're asymptomatic, that's going to give you the most accurate picture. So this will save you time and multiple tests because we've also seen that occur where someone got on the line and got a test day one after being exposed or day two after being exposed. And then sure enough, they were back a week later because then they developed symptoms. So save yourself some trouble. Wait till day 5 to day 7 if you've had that high-risk exposure and you require testing.
Now, I mentioned when I got tested, I didn't really have any symptoms. I eventually did get the symptoms. In fact, the first symptom that I got, kind of the hallmark of this infection, the one that really sort of identifies it and sets it apart, is the loss of taste and smell. And I got that probably 12, 24 hours before I got my test results. And at that point, I kind of knew. I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I've got this. And then my test came back positive. I did eventually get nearly all of the symptoms that the CDC describes, at least the general ones, fever, cough, shortness. Actually, I didn't have shortness of breath. I never had that one. I did get the fatigue, but that was mostly, I could tell I was sick, but I've been sicker than that. You know, I've definitely been worse than I was with this particular infection. I got the muscle aches, I got the headaches, I had the nasal congestion and stuff like that. But all of it was relatively mild. And I know, I presume I'm a lucky one. I know not everybody has mild symptoms. My fever, for example, lasted a couple hours and then never came back. And it was really interesting to just kind of run through the list. I mean, it almost went in order that the CDC lists them on their website.
Well, and I've got to give the CDC some credit. I think they've done an excellent job of keeping those symptoms up to date. If you remember months ago when we first found out about that loss of sense, of taste, or smell, they added that to the list. And then when we started to see those GI symptoms or diarrhea or vomiting, that's been added. They've done an excellent job of updating their list and updating it frequently. As we're all learning together, it seems every few weeks we learn something new about this illness, about this disease, that either improves care or helps us detect the virus.
Well, and that's one of the questions that I had for you is, first of all, can you think of any symptoms that we thought were indicative of COVID-19 early on that we've discovered aren't? Have there been any symptoms that were taken off of that list? I can't think of any, but maybe you can.
Actually, no. Thinking back, I have seen all we've done is add to the list, and appropriately so, which concerns me as in the next couple of months, we'll start to see flu cases on the rise. And that's where we're focused at Prisma Health and preparing for the future, knowing it is right around the corner.
Well, and I was wondering about other diseases that have similar symptoms being misidentified as COVID-19. I mean, follow me for a second here and tell me where my thinking veers off from the truth. If somebody has caught COVID-19, but they are asymptomatic, but then they also catch something else that looks like, because a lot of these symptoms are generic, you know, sinus congestion or sore throat or headache, muscle aches, things like that. Lots of different diseases could give you that. Is it possible that some of these cases are kind of misidentified as COVID-19?
Excellent question, Chris.
Thank you.
I will say, and this is part of our challenge and part of the trouble with this, is if you have a positive COVID-19 test, you absolutely have COVID-19.
Right.
Now, are all of your symptoms attributed to COVID-19, or is it possible to have a co-infection with another virus? And the answer is yes. And so recently, I was speaking with our experts within our health system, our epidemiologists who look at these infection rates across the country, and our infectious disease experts. And what we're learning and seeing is initially where we thought co-infection rates were low, now that we are studying this at a closer level, we're actually seeing co-infection is higher than we had originally thought. So I've heard numbers most recently up to 20% of people will be co-infected with, for example, COVID-19 and the flu. Now, though that's the current number, by no means does that mean come fall will that still be the case. And it's likely that that co-infection rate will rise. Now, what's important in the conversations we're having as specialists in COVID-19 and how we prepare Prisma Health is the fact that within any given household, it's very possible that you could have one person infected with the flu, another family member affected with COVID-19, and yet another family member infected with both. So we will see where we'll have some overlapping of testing to ensure, and I know we're getting ahead of the game, but I do want people to prepare and already begin to think about getting their flu vaccine, because what I want to caution people is just because you have a positive flu does not mean you do not also have COVID-19. And that would be catastrophic for many people to have both flu and COVID-19 at the same time. So please, please, please start planning. It's not too far away to get your flu vaccine this year. And if you've skipped it in years past, I strongly caution you that now is the year to make sure you're doing everything to keep yourself healthy and safe for the coming months.
One of the other questions that I've gotten from a number of people is, so now that you've had it, you can't get it again, right? And I know that you and I talked about this early on. That was an open question. If there was some sort of immunity that was developed, do we know anything more about that now? Have we had cases where people have gotten COVID-19 and recovered from it and then gotten it again?
Yes, we have. In fact, again, speaking with the same specialists and experts within Prisma Health, we were discussing this week that that's absolutely the case. It is possible to get reinfected with COVID-19 as early as 4 to 6 weeks after that first infection.
One question that I've been given from the newsroom, there was a story that came out earlier this week, and I'm just going to read the first line from it. South Carolina hospital administrators have told Senator Lindsey Graham that they remain short-staffed and low on testing supplies in their fight against COVID-19. The article goes on a little ways, but it doesn't specify which hospital administrators or which hospitals. I know that you and I have talked about this extensively in the past, and that Prisma is well-staffed and well-supplied. The question specifically from the news department is, did Prisma tell the senator they were short-staffed and in need of supplies? You guys are still okay on that front, yes?
Yes, we have plenty of PPE or personal protective equipment at this time. However, it's still so important in the conversation we're having with our team members is we've got to continue to conserve the supplies and use them judiciously. So that we can continue that supply, but we have plenty. When it comes to staffing, we are still taking good care of patients. Staffing will become challenged with the greater number of hospitalizations because we are so large within the state and have over 30,000 team members. It's given us some flexibility, and I gotta say, I am so incredibly impressed with the generosity and the collaboration of our team members willing to help one another. So we have nurses in the outpatient space training to help out in the inpatient space. We have folks who are thinking outside the box in the inpatient space to make sure that we're helping other areas. As we've gone to community testing sites, we have employees from all backgrounds and all categories who are going out into those communities to test individuals to see if they have COVID-19. So, yes, we are challenged. We're challenged with staffing. We still have our plans in place and have adequate care to be safe for patients, but it is something we are constantly preparing for and anticipating that those numbers will continue to rise over the next several weeks.
Ever vigilant.
That's right, Chris.
I want to mention again, we mentioned it earlier, but it bears repeating, prismahealth.org/coronavirus is a website where you can get more information about coronavirus and about how Prisma is addressing that concern in our communities. Also, 1063WORD.com is where you can find news about other coronavirus pandemic related things that are not necessarily hospital related. Again, 1063WORD.com is where you can do that. Dr. Saria Sicosio, the ambulatory chief medical officer for Prisma Health, has been my guest today. Thank you very much again for being here, doctor.
Well, and thank you. And if I could just offer a couple of closing words.
Oh, please.
That would be, it takes every South Carolinian to shut this down. Mm-hmm. We need your help. We need everyone to be vigilant. We need to wear our masks in public. We need to keep our social distancing. We've got to continue to wash our hands. We can remain open if we do this together. And I just can't be stronger with that plea. Now is the time to shut this down before it gets any further out of control. And I thank the public for taking this seriously. And be mindful of the stores when they ask you to put a mask on. Please wear your mask. Please stay home if you don't have to go out in public. It's very real. Hospitalizations are going up, as so are deaths. So thank you to the public.
Heartfelt words from Dr. Sicosio. Thank you very much, doctor. I'm Chris Evans, and this has been Focus on the Upstate.
You've been listening to Focus on the Upstate with Chris Evans. If you would like more information on today's topic, email Chris at cevans@intercom.com.